So, English translation. All demoniac personalities like Pralamba, Denuka, Baka, Keshi, Arista, Chanora, Mustika, Kuvalayapida elephant, Kamsa, Yavana, Narakasura, and Pundraka. Great marshals like Shalva, Divida Monkey, and Ballava, Dantavakra, the Seven Bulls, Shambara, Vidurath, and Rukmi, and also great warriors like Kamboja, Macha, Kuru, Sinjai, and Kekaya, would all fight vigorously, either with the Lord directly or with him under his names of Baladev, Arjun, Bhima, etc. And the demons, thus being killed, would attain either the impersonal Brahma Jyoti or his personal abode in the Vaikuntha planets. Should we go through that as usual? Yeah, we should. I apologise if I rushed a little bit there, but it's such a long two verses, translations, and so forth there. We had to get through it. Om Agyanam Thiridam Dasha Gyanjana Shalakaya Daksho Minitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Badayamam Tadati Svapadantikam He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Manmostate Tatsakanchana Gorangi Radha Vindavanishpuri Vishubhanu Stute Devi Pranamami Aripye Vanta Kaupa Thirubhascha Kipo Simbo Devacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnabhyo Namo Nama Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Shimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sasvati Devi Gurvani Pacharine Nirvasesha Shunyavadi Vashachade Satadine Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Actually, slightly out of sequence, I'm just going to read Prabhupada's purport now, which I had on the other page. All manifestations in both the material and spiritual worlds are demonstrations of the different potencies of Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead Baladev in his immediate personal expansion, and Bhima, Arjuna, etc., are his personal associates. The Lord would appear, as he does so whenever he appears, with all his associates and potencies. Therefore, the rebellious souls, like the demons and demoniac men mentioned by names like Pralamba, will be killed, either by the Lord himself or his associates. All these affairs will be clearly explained in the 10th canto. But we should know well that the above-mentioned living entities killed would attain salvation, either being merged into the Brahma Jyoti of the Lord, or being allowed to enter into the abodes of the Lord, called Vaikunthas. This has already been explained by Bhishmadeva in the first canto. All persons who participated in the battle of Vilda Kurukshetra, or otherwise with the Lord or with Baladeva, etc., would benefit by attaining spiritual existence according to the situation of their minds at the time of death. Those who recognize the Lord would enter Vaikuntha, and those who estimated the Lord only as a powerful being would attain salvation by merging into the spiritual existence of the impersonal Brahma Jyoti of the Lord. But every one of them would get release from material existence, since such is the benefit of those who played with the Lord in Mikkeli. What to imagine, what would be the position of those who devoutly serve the Lord in transcendental relationship with him? So there's a lot there. I was looking at this verse and purport the other day, and I thought, well, there's a lot to go through here. So I'll do my best. So, of course, the first thing that struck me about this particular purport was, well, you know, you get a demon and you enter into Brahma Jyoti. So even if you're dying fighting Krishna or one of his associates, or you're on the battlefield or whatever leela you're involved in, yes, you're in leela fighting the Lord, and that is in itself there's some benedictions there. But even if you don't know who the Lord is, you enter the Brahmajyoti. But then for devotees, the Brahmajyoti is actually not such a great abode. Even if there is some temporary liberation. Yes, it is a place where, I suppose, you're just entering into this energy, this light, this sense of oneness, this Brahmajyoti emanating from the Goloka Vrindavan. But there's no form, there's no variety, there's no relationships. So the jiva, having been a demon, whatever he's been doing in the material world, goes, then enters into the Brahmajyoti, but he's accustomed to form, variety, relationships and activities. So sooner or later, he's going to fall back down from the Brahmajyoti back into the material world again. So just as devotees, our aim is not to merge into the personal oneness. It is not a long-term solution, even if one is in the Brahmajyoti for millions of earth-like years. Still, if you come down again, what kind of a deal is that, I hasten to add. Those who are actually playing part in this leader fighting Krishna, who know Krishna who he is, I'm fighting with the Supreme Lord, but I'm part of this leela, will again enter into the Vaikuntha, the spiritual world, the eternal abode. And of course, the best example of this is Jai and Vijay, who of course were gatekeepers to Vaikuntha, who came down simply, of course, they offended the four Kumaras, and therefore will just take birth in the universe as punishment, actually. But we'll be demons, so we can be demons for a while, powerful demons, actually, and then go back to Vaikuntha as soon as we can. Even though, by our calculations, demons of former yugas actually lived extraordinary long periods of time, I must add. So Jai and Vijay in the Satya Yuga, the period as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. In the Treta Yuga, they were Ravana and his brother Kumbhakarna, the great sleeping giant Kumbhakarna. And in the much more recently, in the Dwapara Yuga, this is in, of course, Mahabharat period now, they were Shishupal and Dantavakra. Dantavakra, of course, was an ally of Jarasandha, who was constantly fighting Krishna in Mathura. And in the end, Krishna got fed up, of course, and moved to Dwarka. Dantavakra, Danta, dental. This is where our word dental comes from. Teeth. He had bad teeth. He was known for his rotten teeth. There you go. Just for a bit of trivia there for you. But so often demons don't have good teeth, it would seem. But actually, it wasn't just Jai and Vijay, actually, although they were very significant demons. The clash, if you like, the competition, you'll see, as described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, goes on and on and on throughout the history of the universe. Between the devas and the asuras, we find they are constantly actually, the demons are constantly trying to, take control of the universe. The demons, of course, being born from the lower part of Lord Brahma, but nevertheless part of creation. The demigods coming, of course, the hymns are coming from Brahma's mouth, and the demigods coming from the upper part of his body, but nevertheless all part of Lord Brahma's creation. Demigods, demons as well. And you find there's so many leelas between the demigods and the demons. How do we know who's who? In the Kali Yuga, we can't really tell. The demons are less obvious. Maybe they wear a suit and tie. But then again, some nice people wear suit and ties as well, honest. Prabhupada actually is the Kali Yuga demons are much less powerful than that of former Yugas. But yes, they could be humans with demoniac qualities. And what do the demons or the asuras anywhere in the universe and any yuga, what qualities do they have? It's quite obvious, you know. They want power and control for themselves, not for Lord Vishnu. They're happy to stay in this material world as long as they can. They're not looking for liberation, but rather power and position in this world. They don't support vegetarianism. They don't have respect for family life or the Vedic principles. And destroy temples, destroy families, and are only interested in things of that nature. As the demigods, of course, pray to Lord Brahma whenever they're in trouble, and together they go and pray to Garbhadakshay Vishnu on the milky ocean and ask him for help. Please, Lord, appear, save us. This actually happened quite recently when there were so many demons being born on the earth in the Dwapara Yuga, actually. And Bhumidev, the personification of Mother Earth, was actually in great distress, just a bit like she probably is now, actually. She's in great stress. She went to Lord Brahma, save me, please. These demons are taking birth in noble human families and yet acting like demons, torturing the earth, going to unnecessary war, trying to control, seek control of minerals and resources for themselves. What did Brahma do? Of course, he petitioned Lord Vishnu. And of course, that was when Lord Krishna came to the earth. Of course, there's the famous verse from the Gita here and purport on that note. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 7. Yada yada hidamasya gliniti bhariti bharata ajutamam madamasya tadamaham shijamiyaham. Whenever and wherever there is a decline of religious practice, O descendant of Bharat, and a prominent rise of irreligion, predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. Prabhupada writes, the Vedic principles push one towards complete surrender unto him, and whenever such principles are disturbed by the demoniac, the Lord appears. From the Bhagavatam we understand that Lord Buddha is the incarnation of Krishna, who appeared when materialism was rampant and materialists were using the pretext of the authority of the Vedas. Although there are certain restrictive rules and regulations regarding animal sacrifice for particular purposes in the Vedas, people of demoniac tendency still look to animal sacrifice without reference to Vedic principles. Lord Buddha, for example, appeared in order to stop this nonsense. Each and every avatar or incarnation of the Lord has a particular mission, and they are all described in the revealed scriptures. No one should be accepted as an avatar unless is referred to by the scriptures. So if someone is declaring themselves as the Lord, or of course that's a demoniac quality ultimately if they are not bona fide, or if someone is using the Vedic scriptures to justify animal slaughter, for example, which was a practice that was performed under certain circumstances in former yugas, but in the Kali Yuga there aren't the qualified brahmanas to do so. Therefore, to misinterpret the Vedic scriptures for one's own endeavor is a demoniac quality. For example, Ravana, and for that matter Hiranyakashipu, were actually learned individuals. They knew Sanskrit far better than anyone on the planet today, and Kumbhakarna. They knew, had meditational techniques. They had great sense control. Kumbhakarna and Ravana, of course, going into the mountains when they were younger, performed great austerities to get mercy of Lord Shiva, actually. But the point is, what was their objective was still selfish. So we, as devotees, we're not necessarily into being academically, although it's good, but ultimately our priority, everything has to revolve around bhakti, everything has to revolve around devotion. So our approach to the Vedic scriptures and Vedic culture has to be based on bhakti, through the bhakti lens. Otherwise, ultimately, demonic qualities could creep in, actually, where one could be trying to use the scriptures for one's own ends. So Krishna takes birth on the earth to rid the earth of demoniac qualities. But there are other reasons why Krishna fights demons. What are the reasons? I'll tell you one thing, Krishna can't fight demons in the spiritual world, in Goloka Vrindavan. Nor can he fight demons in the Brahmajyoti. Why? Why can't he fight demons in the spiritual world? Why can't he fight demons? There are none. Demons can't get there. And if they do, then they go back to become devotees like Jai and Vijay. You need a passport, you need a visa, actually, to get to any planet. What to speak of get to the spiritual planets? I guess you could get special mercy by being killed by Krishna. Failing that, given that Krishna is not, is not physically before our eyes, as it were, as he was just over 5,000 years ago. Therefore, it's better that we chant Hare Krishna, basically. It's a very easy method for the Kali Yuga. But ultimately, yes, he can't, it's his leader. He wants to fight. He enjoys fighting. He toys with his enemies, whether it's Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, when he's in the form of Lord Ram. Of course, you've got the boar incarnation fighting Hiranyaksha. Nrsingadev fighting Hiranyakashipu. There's so many things, and I've just listed in the verse today and the purport, there's a long list of different demons that Krishna would fight in the material world. But because it's Krishna Leela, it is only still transcendental. That's how the demons are able to get liberated. And many of the demons, as we've mentioned, are just with a stare as perhaps a punishment or a special benediction. It's fascinating. So it's a privilege to fight Krishna. Even Kamsa knew. He was in great anxiety when Lord Krishna was born. He did what he could to prevent that from happening. But of course, as we know the story, Lord Krishna was born. He was looked after by, of course, Yashoda and Nanda, their foster parents, actually. And Kamsa knew that Krishna was born somewhere in this world, because Durgadevi told him. He tried to give one of the daughters of Vasudeva and Devaki. Durga appeared. "You fool, Kamsa! You think you can kill me? But know this, Kamsa. This Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is born somewhere in this world, and he will come to kill you, Kamsa." After that. But Kamsa had one benediction. That was a bit of drama for you, by the way. But Kamsa had one quality. He was always thinking of Krishna. Okay, it wasn't necessarily in a positive way. "Oh, Krishna's coming, Krishna's coming. What am I going to do to kill Krishna? Oh, Krishna's coming. He's going to unseat my throne." Because another demoniac quality is once you get that position, you will do anything to keep that position. You are attached to your throne. You are attached to your position. And you will kill even young children, babies, to maintain that position. And that's exactly what Kamsa did. And we are all familiar with the birth of Lord Krishna story. Kamsa had pride as well. His sister, Devaki, he organized her wedding very nicely. I think it was 10,000 elephants and horses, whatever the figures are. It was a big wedding. It was a big wedding, bigger than what you have in the Haveli. It was a big, big wedding. And much bigger, 1,000 times the size of that, actually. Can you imagine trying to organize that? But yes, and Kamsa was even riding the personal chariot of Vasudeva and Devaki for the streets. People waving flags, the fireworks, flagoons, and celebration and feasting. But then this voice from the sky told Kamsa, "Kamsa, the 8th male child of Vasudeva and Devaki will try to kill you." Immediately he went to kill his own sister. Imagine what kind of mentality that is. But he also, apart from, of course, the persuasive diplomatic words of Vasudeva, "Don't kill him, what will the people think of you? It's her wedding, it's our wedding day, and you're about to kill your own sister. Kamsa, come on. Think about a bit of PR here, you know." In other words, he didn't kill his sister, but he wanted to, but because demons sometimes will do things so-called beneficial, organized and paid for, you know, big dowry, obviously, his sister's wedding. That's a nice thing to do. Didn't kill Devaki. Oh, how merciful of him. Oh, he's not that bad. But the point was, ultimately, demons will sometimes do. Sometimes they'll even give in charity. Or sometimes even give to the brahmanas. But the objective may be selfish. You see, that's the difference. The objective may be selfish. There may be some other motive which can be understood to be demoniac ultimately. Certainly, undeniably, in the case of Kamsa. So when Krishna was born in Vrindavan, Kamsa found out, of course, that Krishna was being born in Vrindavan. A young child, of course, before he could even walk. So Kamsa thought, "Well, I'm not going to send my armies in because that's bad PR. I will find, I have demoniac allies across Bharat, across Persia and India, as we call it now. They'll come one by one, they will try and kill Krishna." So these shape-shifting demons, they could have the power, like Rakshasas actually, had the power to change from a human shape into any animal or other they wanted, any shape, even a whirlwind. And one by one, they tried to kill Krishna and Balaram. And one by one, they failed as easily and defeated like an elephant snaps a twig. Putana, of course, Putana, pure, not pure, that's how she gets her name, came disguised as a beautiful cowherd damsel, went to breastfeed Krishna. Krishna sucked the life out of her body, and her true form was revealed. And she represents the pseudo-guru, in a sense. Of course, these are all historical things, but they also represent things as well. The pseudo-guru, in other words, pretending to be gentle and nice and kind when her objective was to destroy. Trinivat, the tornado demon. When Lord Krishna was carried away by this tornado demon, Krishna held tightly to Trinivat's neck and became very, very heavy. And again, he couldn't take the weight of Krishna anymore, and bang! Fell to the ground. All different kinds of ways, in the form of a tornado. Vatasura was in the form of a young calf. Let's see whatever. I mean, we all know the demons. Bakasura, a monstrous bird. Baka came in the form of a huge crane. Krishna grabbed his mouth and cracked his mouth open. In other words, he was killing the demons in their disguised form and taking advantage of that form. Agasura. We know the story of Agasura, this great snake demon. Of course, Agasura, all the cowherd boys were kind of trapped inside the mouth. Krishna came in to rescue his friends and then fought his way out, destroyed that huge Agasura demon. Aristasura, the bull demon. The demon Aristasura made the earth tremble as he tore it apart with his hooves. Krishna seized Aristasura by the horns and threw him back 18 steps, just like an elephant might do when fighting a rival elephant. As the demon Aristasura attacked again, Lord Krishna seized him by the horns and knocked him to the ground with his foot. Kram! Then Krishna thrashed Aristasura around and around with one hand like it was a wet cloth. Like that. Finally, Lord Krishna yanked out one of the demon's horns and stuck him with it until he lay dead on the ground. So this particular demon, Aristasura, represents pride arising from a false religion. That is contrary to bhakti. We kind of, in one sense, a false religion, as I was mentioning earlier, one can put on the show of a pseudo-guru or on the show of being a religious person, but you judge a tree by the fruit that it bears. Judge a tree by the fruit that it bears. What is the character of this person? What is their objective? What are they giving? What fruit is coming from their mouth? So, you know, this is, I think, an important thing for us to learn. Dainikasura, the donkey demon. Krishna and the cowherds wandered into the forest, captivated by the fragrance of the fruit and the palm trees. And then Dainikasura charged at them, at Balaram first, bit him and kicked him with his hind legs. Balaram, however, caught hold of Dainikasura's legs and whirled him across, round and round, whirled him and then threw him into the trees, shattering his chest, neck and waist as the tree fell along with the demon. Balaram easily killed Dainikasura's demon attendants and set the forest open for the cowherds to finally kill Dainikasura as well. And this particular Dainikasura represents gross material intelligence. In other words, intelligence is not a bad thing if it's used in Krishna's service. But if it's gross material intelligence, then this, of course, can be contrary to, you know, without the bhakti, contrary to devotional service. Anyway, I need to leave time to talk about Gaurishodas Babaji as well. So let's kind of continue quickly. Kaliya, we all know that Kaliya wasn't actually a demon. After Krishna was dancing on the heads of the Kaliya serpent in the Yamuna River, Kaliya got tired, and Kaliya and his wives realized, actually, I'm getting Krishna's mercy here. He's Krishna's lotus feet on my many heads, many hoods. And actually, Kaliya and his wives ended up praying to the Lord, actually, for forgiveness and mercy. But still, he's listed as one of the demons of Vrindavan. There's Pralambasura. He was killed by Balaram. And there's the Keshi demon. And of course, he was killed also by Krishna and Balaram. But the bad quality associated with the Keshi demon was feeling I am a great devotee. So the ego. So you may even be technically, superficially, a good devotee. But if it goes to your head, I am the best devotee of all. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. You know, then again, that's seen as a negative quality. So when we hear about these different demons, we have to fight the demons within our own heart. A bit like, say, Dussehra festival, where the 10 heads of Ravana, each representing a different negative quality. If we watch Ravana burn, but also when we're hearing about the Krishna Leela fighting demons in Vrindavan, we can have a similar approach. Because in the Kali Yuga, in the Satya Yuga, demons actually were on different planets, different parts of the universe, as I mentioned. And in the end, the demons, of course, were sent to the lower planets. In the Treta Yuga, the demons could be found in different countries, just like Lanka or whatever, the different countries on the same planet, like in Ram Leela. In the Dwapara Yuga, demons could be in the same family. The Kurus and the Pandavas, you know, ultimately they were related. But one was demoniac, of course. Duryodhana, demoniac qualities. Same family, even with the cousins. Kali Yuga, it's the same person. It's us. The angel, the traditional angel and demons on each shoulder. Go on, take it. No. Go on, do it. Oh, no. In fact, we're doing that all the time, even in the modern context, even if we're on our phone. Oh, someone has sent me something like that. Someone has sent me something. Oh, look at this, Prabhu. It's a really, really controversial YouTube channel. Oh, yeah. You know, think about the rounds. This is much more spicy. Oh, look at that. You know, this kind of thing. So within our own phone, or within our own hearts, we have the demoniac and divine qualities. As devotees, we are trying, of course, to fan the positive qualities. Of course we are. We're trying. But the fact that we're trying is something which would attract Krishna's mercy and attention. Of course, other demons, Chinora, Mustika, the wrestlers. Kamsa himself, of course, in the end, gets it by Krishna. In the wrestling arena in Mathura, Krishna, a bit older now, moved to Mathura, bam, beats the hell out of his chest. And in front of everyone, Chinora, Mustika are destroyed by Krishna and Balaram. And finally, the showdown, the climax of Krishna's youth, actually, killing Kamsa himself, yet another demon. Remember also that Kamsa was an ally of Jarasandha and Shishupala, all these others that appear in the Mahabharata. And the demons in Mahabharata, as listed in the purport and verse, are associated with Mahabharata, associated when Krishna was a little bit older, actually. But the same principle applies. But so many of the demons, of course, who ultimately are killed by the Pandavas or Krishna, or end up on the wrong side of the coin, as it were, in the battle of Kurukshetra. Not all were demons, actually. Bhishmadeva, of course, on the wrong side, but was actually a devotee. And Karna as well was an interesting one, which, time for another time, about Karna, the greatest anti-hero of the Mahabharata. So many of the demons that were mentioned, actually, in the verse here. Shambhara, who was actually killed by Pradyumna, Krishna's son. Vidurath, who was a Kuru warrior. Rukmi, of course, was killed by Balaram over an argument over playing chess. So that's what I have to say about that. In other words, ultimately we have to destroy the demons in our own heart, and for the use of Krishna's weapon, Krishna's fists, the holy name, as it were. The weapon of the holy name, our japa bead bag, greater than any machine gun or modern weaponry. It is the great mystic visa, actually, passport to the spiritual world. But first, we have to be qualified, and that's where the journey begins. So what I wanted to do, I've also been asked to remind everybody that after this is going to be Pushpanjali, of course, to Gaur Kishor Das Babaji Maharaj. And I believe that there's someone who's going to be instructing us for that, and I'm sure everyone here is familiar with that. So before I end the class, we'll talk a little bit about him, of course. Here we go. Got some notes here. I'll just give a quick summary, because we're running. It's already quarter to nine. So, of course, notwithstanding the Varna and Ashram system here, the Gaurakishore Das Babaji actually was a married man, but in 1849, he was a great devotee as a Grihastha. But in 1849, his wife passed away, untimely, I think. And Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, he moved to Vrindavan and took initiation from Bhagavat Das Babaji, a disciple of Jagannath Das Babaji, who, of course, is also listed in our disciplic succession in the line of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the Gaudiya Vaishnav tradition. In the 30 years that followed, Gaurakishore Das stayed in Vrindavan performing his bhajan, chanting and so forth. Sitting in seclusion, he chanted 200,000 names of Krishna every day, which is about 128 rounds a day. Which is a lot. I mean, we struggle with what we have on our list. So imagine 128 rounds. That's very quick rounds as well, I imagine. He felt separation from Radha Govinda and cried profusely, deeply, and often. As he wandered through the 12 forests of Raj, he would loudly chant the holy names in lamentation. After those 30 years of rendering service in Vrindavan, he felt inspired to Sri to travel to Navadvip Dham. There he visited all the sites connected with Lord Chaitanya's pastimes and would chant and chant and chant. Regularly he associated with and heard the Srimad Bhagavatam from Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Gajumadvip. Of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur appearing here. Of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, a very important Vaishnava in our line, and of course he was also the father, of course, of Bimal Prasad, or later to be known as Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, of course, who himself became a disciple of Gaurakishore Das Babaji. So all the Sipsic succession there, all connected very much in that way. Anyway, Gaurakishore Das Babaji eventually accepted, of course, Bimal Prasad or Bhaktisiddhanta as his disciple. In essence, the essence of Gaurakishore Das Babaji's instructions can be summarized as this. The divine name of Krishna offers the one and only shelter. One should never try to remember Radha Damodar's transcendental pastimes by artificial methods. Constant chanting of the divine names will purify the heart. Very interesting artificial methods. From other pastimes and the way that he kind of responded to cheaters and those trying to get some good karma or benediction or whatever, he didn't have any time for that. He was only interested really in the bhakti. He was a no-nonsense Babaji. Was not interested in artificially doing anything. So if you're going to do something, be real. Be a real devotee. Anyway, he left his visible body, his vapu, in 1915. But he made a statement before he died, which was, "Oh, drag my dead body for the streets of Navadvip," you know, like in a chariot or in a cart or something. And some of his disciples and so-called well-wishers and followers didn't kind of understand that this was actually they took it too literally. Let's do just that. His body is here. Let's kind of drag him on in. Of course, Bhaktisiddhanta said, "No, this is just a sign of his great humility. You should never do that with someone like this." Of course not. And he said, anyone who's qualified to do that, who's qualified, who has never had any kind of relationship with any loose woman, or that even in the last 24 hours is contaminated, therefore not qualified to even touch his body. What to speak of tracking it for the streets of Navadvip. Hearing these bold words, the black-hearted so-called brahmanas were silent and left the room. Bhaktisiddhanta then established the Samadhi of Gaurakishore Das Babaji on the banks of the Sri Chaitanya Mahat's Radha Kund, near Lord Chaitanya's Yogapith in Sridham, Mayapur. So those devotees who are going to go to Mayapur, who have been to Mayapur many times, can go to the Yogapith, which of course is not far from the TOVP and ISKCON Center, and you can go in and see his Samadhi there. So let's have a look. I think we'll finish. It's already 9:10. Unless anybody wants to add anything. Perhaps I've left something important out that needs mentioning. Prabhuji.
I've read that So, but just to be able to do his japa peacefully, he would go to such a place. So it's just an example of his humility.
Absolutely. I mean, it's something which is, the way that Babaji's, you find this with Jagannath Das Babaji, Gorgeshwar Das Babaji in particular. Babaji's are actually, cannot be understood from a material point of view. You know, anything to do with all the decisions they make, like the one you just mentioned, it's beyond us. It's not for us to imitate either. We shouldn't be artificially trying to be like that. Or Haridas Thakur sometimes would eat Mahaprasadam that had been, you know, just from the floor, for example, or that had gone off. But his body would be transcendental. But it's not for us to imitate necessarily. But their realization was so beyond the bodily platform that these things, toilets or the house of a prostitute was another example. These places to put people off, kind of following them around and giving them too much attention, was simply, you know, beyond ego, beyond the bodily consideration. He just wanted his bhajan, actually. However, more importantly, not only is this beyond our realization and qualification, ISKCON itself is a mission in the sense that we are a global movement where we have to kind of, there's certain codes we should follow ourselves. So even very advanced devotees, whatever, should also say, okay, we have to think about ISKCON's image and things like that. But reading and hearing about the activities and pastimes of the Babaji's is very purifying for the heart for us. But we should not imitate a Babaji because we're not on that level. So, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gorgeshwar Das Babaji Maharaj ki jai. Thank you. Hare Krishna.